Love is like oxygen. It really does keep us alive. When we feel we care so deeply about someone and want so much for them to be okay and to be safe. When we experience love from those that we deeply care for or care about or that really care about us, then we can start to know how to love other things and ourselves.
To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourself and the relationship with others, finding our stability and our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Reason With Me podcast. It's been a while. It's been a while since I've done a solo episode. So I thought I would do that today. Get into a pretty, just a simple, basic topic, really easy to talk to, which is love. That is a complex one, right? So I guess as a little disclaimer, there was a part of me that was like, do your research, get it all done. You know, find out all the things there are, get all the controversial opinions on love, and then make a formal decision and professional research-based decision and talk about love. I did a little bit of that, but then I was like, I think what I ended up with is this is a podcast all about connection, self-worth, and relationships, and I am very authentic and I like to pride myself on that rawness and thought a lot of this will come best from me just speaking from the heart and sharing what my thoughts are and what I think in terms of love, some of my experiences, and, you know, I guess some of the stories that I've got and the definitions that I kind of like. And I guess it's take what you can and leave the rest. Take it with a grain of salt, whatever I talk about. There's obviously lots of opinions. There's lots of theories. There's lots of different ideas around love. And the best thing to do is take what you can, leave the rest. So that's my little disclaimer. But yeah, lots of things been going on in my life at the moment and with personally and in the business. So I thought love is such a powerful emotion and feeling that we have towards one another and something we can go in and out of that, yeah, is hectic and beautiful. So it's got lots of edges. So what I'm going to cover is what is love? And good luck with that. Then how it kind of links with attachment. The fundamentals of someone being there for me, linking that with self-worth and our mental health, how vulnerability and pain is involved in that process and some of the risks in that, the idea of fantasy versus intuition, the concept of saying I love you, and then finishing on self-love. So Buckle up. Let's get into it. I hope you enjoy it. And I hope it does resonate with you. So lots of love. Let's go. Okay. So a few weeks ago, someone very close to me reached out. They work with children. And they had this little girl who asked her, what is love? And she reached out to me and said, oh, what would you say? And obviously this is in regards to quite a young person. But the answer that I kind of gave was, love is like oxygen. It really does keep us alive. When we feel we care so deeply about someone and want so much for them to be okay and to be safe. When we experience love from those that we deeply care for or care about or that really care about us, then we can start to know how to love other things and ourselves. Now, keeping in mind that was to a very young person who probably is getting quite a lot of love in her life from her caregivers and from the people that love her. And she's got a long road to go to start to experience the complexities of what love can be. But I like to keep it nice and simple, is love is like oxygen. We need it. We crave it. We depend on it, especially from a young age. Without it, we wouldn't survive. So if we expand on this, I guess it's those really strong feelings of affection, wanting to protect, warmth, and respect for someone else that naturally builds and grows over time. It's a signal or symbol of commitment and time, mutual trust and acceptance. There's a lot of things that really make up love, and I guess we could talk about it all day and we can have lots of different words to it. But what I think comes down to in a lot of the work that I do is it's a somatic thing, which is like a process within the body, how we are feeling internally. Love is just a word. So is pain. So is fear. These are words. How do we know? How would we describe that is sometimes based on the feeling we have internally. And that can be different for everyone. And I think that being able to start to identify and check in with what's going on for us is a really nice way of going, how am I actually feeling? For all emotions, really. But it's a feeling. It's a really powerful feeling that's got lots of different ways of expressing and showing. But I think that it's a really good place to start, is checking in with how I'm feeling in my body and really noticing what goes on when I'm with the people that I say that I love, that I say that I'm really care for, or noticing and observing how that person shows up with me. So it gets really, really intense. The more we step into, I'm like holding back almost on like how far we can go into it. But I guess I'll talk through a little bit more on what that can kind of be like if we fast forward a little bit to like as an adult, rather than, you know, in our upbringing, which I'll come back to. It's this idea of being conscious and aware and what that can look like in terms of love. I think a really beautiful way to look at it, which I think Jay Shetty talked to, is this idea of conscious love, where people work independently to take care of themselves so they can bring their best self to the other person, to the other parts of their life. When we are really focusing on looking after us so that we can be present, emotionally available, emotionally present, emotionally safe with someone else, then that work that we do for us allows us to kind of show up. When we start to feel that towards someone else, it's it's powerful. It's really powerful. And, you know, it comes with a lot of different emotions that kind of spark or stem from love itself. I like to look at it as once we are in love, true love, it comes down to, I will meet you in your mess, not your best. It's the idea that when someone sticks around, no matter how hard shit gets, then they really do love you. Now, obviously, there's going to be parameters in that, in what we need to do for ourselves in order to stay in that loving space. And obviously that can get broken down and shifted and changed. And that's the beauty of all emotions, is they do come and go. But the concept of being in love is different to the emotion of love. And without trying to overly explain that, I think it is that felt sense, which sometimes is hard to explain. It's kind of that, you know, speechless, how do you put words to it sort of feeling. And that's really dependent, right? We all have a template for what loving relationship means. We all have a different scale on the spectrum of love. And that's really based on what role models or who should have shared the blueprint to what it looks like to be in a loving relationship. And this is where it comes back down to what we saw, what we experienced, what we've seen as those, archetypes of relationship. And generally that comes from our caregivers or, you know, mom, dad, or whoever's looking after us, grandparents, really close friends of the family, or foster carers or whatever it is that sort of represent caregivers, is they're the people showing you the template. You know, we don't learn about love in school as a topic. It's not in the curriculum, right? So who we get taught off, you know, who are our teachers is it's our caregivers, it's our parents. So when they are showing up for each other, when they are consciously engaging and emotionally there for each other, then we start to see what it can mean to be in a loving relationship. Now, that is intergenerational. Each one of our caregivers have an experience of what they got taught originally. And that naturally can grow and shift and change based on further experiences out of life. But some of that stuff can stick. Some of that stuff can really be part of what we carry on and what we carry through and how we end up showing that love. So it really does come back down to what we saw. And as you can imagine, this is why it's a spectrum. This is why it's a scale. Not everyone can love as hard as me. Not everyone can show up in the same way, in a loving way that another person can. And that's based on the capacity, the availability that we have for ourselves and we have for another, based on what we've learned, based on what we've seen. So if that experience was fighting, domestic violence, arguments, lack of boundaries, lack of commitment, you know, divorce, you know, relationships are kind of in and out of each other's lives. And then a young person seeing that, a child seeing that, is going to start to create that template. This is what it means to love. So for me, there's divorce in my family from like the age of 7. And then dad, you know, in and out of life, doing that whole thing where it's very much a fortnightly visits or on the weekend or whatever it might be. So I saw the sort of loss of that and what that meant to then not have that person there, and then how that kind of impacted me. And, you know, naturally then where I see myself in the terms of love. So love for me is scary. Love for me is like, fuck, it can end in it can end in divorce. It can be this thing that stops and breaks, and therefore choosing that partner. You know, one of my biggest fears is divorce, right? Because it's this stoppage, this grief, this end, this loss that can overwhelm the idea of like, well, if I get love, that love might end. And if I get love, I've got to be careful because it's something that doesn't last. So that's my kind of blueprint. And you can imagine, you know, whether you identify with that or just in another way of people staying together and not really loving each other and showing that in an emotional way or showing it in different ways that didn't quite land for you. A lot of us need emotional intimacy and connection from you know, closeness, I guess, from early on. That's the way that it goes. So if we kind of shift in gears and go into the attachment of love and just attachment in general is, I think, bottom line, you know, I see some couples and I work a lot with individuals in relationship on their relationships. And what it all comes back down to, and a lot of this work's done by Sue Johnson of emotionally focused therapy, is at the end of the day, all we care about is, are you there for me? Can you show up for me? So the three important questions that are on the unconscious level and sometimes conscious level of our minds is accessibility or availability. Can I reach you? Responsiveness. Can I rely on you emotionally? And engagement. Do I know you will value me and stay close to me? This is literally all we care about. When we start to turn the light onto that, then we can drop into the vulnerability of seeking that out and actually getting our needs met and expressing that in a really effective way with our partner. But a lot of the time we don't know that shit. It's unconscious. That attachment's been based on birth, even prenatally, is that when we're born, we start to create these attachments with our caregivers. And that, you know, I won't go into all the attachment. We'll definitely do more on that later in different episodes. Is there's secure attachments, there's insecure attachments, and there's avoidant attachments. And that's based on the experiences we have when we're young. So the constant question in our mind is when we're young is like, I depend on you. I'm reliable on you. So we show that in different behaviors by reaching, crying, getting attention, trying to sort of smile and laugh when we see them, making that really nice physical contact or eye contact. And we create this attachment, this beautiful thing that really holds the way that we go about our lives in the world and how we start to interpret the world. But yeah, those are the three things. I'm going to say them again. It's just all about, are you there for me? So are you available? Are you responsive? And are you able to engage? This is what it's all about. So when that stuff starts to spill out sideways, I've done some blogs on resentment and other things around that sort of thing emotionally and how we sit with our emotions is we just see the behaviors. When you can't show up for me, I withdraw. When you can't show up for me, I poke around to try and get it in my needs. And it's because I've got this emotional deprivation. It's because I don't feel emotionally safe and there's the disconnection that starts. So we will do different behaviors like holding resentments, like silencing, like withdrawing or being quite demanding or forthcoming in the way that we will try and do whatever it takes to get back to that. And that can be a very scary place. A lot of it is sometimes quite unintentional, but it's what we do on the surface in our behaviors when we're triggered into not being there for. So I do think it all comes back to that. So when love is kind of threatened, we freak out. Imagine as a kid when you don't have love. Feeling unloved is strongly correlated with feelings of self-worth or having thoughts of not being lovable or not being good enough for that love. So it really creates low self-esteem, low self-worth, which can lead to naturally all the other kind of mental illnesses like depression and anxiety. So this is key. If we look at how it all links to worth and our mental health, love is powerful, as I sort of said. It actually plays a really big long-term role in our health. Feeling emotionally connected and feeling that love being expressed naturally, whether that be through, I guess, agreements, boundaries, action, quality, really can help us feel better, healthy way, and mentally healthy way. It actually really helps increase our immunity, believe it or not. A really cool statistic that I did read on the research that I did decide to do on some of this stuff is the study on marriage. And, you know, both in women and men, particularly being on women, is that marriages that are experiencing less love are more likely to experience elevated blood pressure and higher levels of stress hormones compared to that in which happy marriages are and go through. Which is crazy. It's this idea of love, or having it, or having it close to us and being, having that emotional intimacy can actually affect our mental health, which makes sense. Obviously, heartbreak sucks, but just in that, like, disconnection and being abandoned or being rejected or not being met halfway has a much bigger effect on, I'm having conflict in my relationships, I'm in conflict in my marriage, or I'm feeling distant from my family, or I'm not being shown up for my friends. It has a physiological impact and can be a killer, right? Because it does create such pain. Kids don't survive if they don't have a person, because we're dependent on them. So when that's been the start, it's naturally going to brew and create quite crazy ways of trying to do whatever we can to survive and adapt. This is why relationships are really challenging and can be hard to show up for. There's a lot of good in it too. Obviously, those stats are about what can happen when we're not in a loving relationship, but we look at what can happen in loving relationship. Love produces oxytocin in the body, which is the love drug, right? It essentially releases this nice feeling within us. So that is a source that helps elevate our mood, helps us feel good about ourselves, helps us feel good about others. People like validation. People like being, seen and heard, and that can have a really big impact on just how I go about the rest of my life. So again, there's a lot of scale on the goods and the not so goods in terms of this powerful, crazy emotion of love and being in love and feeling that sensation of love towards someone else and towards ourselves. What I want to move into is vulnerability. So one of my favorite quotes is, it's up on my wall in the clinic, I say it all the time, is being vulnerable is the risk we need to take to experience connection. Which means we are all vulnerable in love. It kind of feels like in its intensity when we're in the, you know, the feels, is like we're emotionally kind of naked and no one wants to be, you know, caught naked. People have dreams about that. It's like, I was naked. So it's vulnerable, right? It creates this fear within us. Love is so beautiful, but it is a scary risk. And it's that risk that people either step into or they don't step into. When we start to feel it, we might have a couple of different responses. Get after it. Get more of this. This feels amazing. So I love bombing is such a thing in our society. And then naturally then in a lot of love bombing situations, we fucking freak out. It's like too much, too soon. And then we withdraw or we avoid and get our needs met and bail. And the other part is just keeping on having that love cup tipping over. Oh, I want more of this. This is so good. And I think next week we'll have a really good chat about love addiction, which will kind of nicely blend into what we're talking about now. But yeah, it goes both ways, right? We love it. We love love. I mean, I love love. Some people are so scared of it because it's just as much of a risk. A lot of time I ask my clients, what's the most difficult emotion that you sit with or you get overwhelmed by? Some people say love and joy because it's so foreign. It's actually unfamiliar based on experience, that to then feel love or to feel things are going well or to have happiness and joy actually is so against the norm and so unfamiliar and uncertain that we don't feel safe when we feel it. So it doesn't matter what it is, a threat is a threat. We're very habitual creatures that are fear-based, and we, even if it's bad, we will get used to something, and experiencing something that's completely different is foreign. So we're going to have fear around, what do we do with this? Love creates sensitivity, and there is always a threat of unknown, of potential pain. That sensitivity can show up in many different ways, but everyone seems to and tends to have one, right? A certain thing that happens in a relationship, a certain moment of whether it be abandonment, rejection, or distance, or, you know, it becoming quite real and full on and overwhelming in its, oh my God, this is a relationship. This is a thing. It triggers what come of that past has shown us. You know, a lot of people have been through heartbreak. A lot of people have not even been in a relationship and feel quite scared by the idea of, if I get it, I'll lose it. So we all have a sensitivity that can be brought up. And I guess that's the risk, right? Because you don't know. We don't know. How can you? How can you know? How can you put so much trust and, I guess, emphasis and ownership to someone else that they're going to be able to show up for you? It's scary. It's a lot of potential pain that's unknown. And when I look at I'm ready to love again, it also means I'm ready to be hurt again. Something that I want so badly, so many people want it because we crave it, we need it, we depend on it naturally. Whether we love ourselves or not, we're meant to be in relationship, and we're meant to be in tribe, we're meant to be in community, we're meant to be together. So there's a pull towards it. There's an attachment that's never going to go anywhere, that we need this thing. And that naturally comes with its risks, comes with its pain. That's a very vulnerable space for a lot of people. When you find synergy and connection when it works, fuck, it's a relief and it feels so good. But there's always that thing that I got to keep working on me, and I could keep staying present. I got to keep showing up for my other, because yeah, it takes time, effort, energy to show up. The other part about the vulnerability and pain is people want to skip it. People want to skip that part. So what we do, and I'm definitely someone that's done this in the past and have to be really accountable for myself, and maybe others identify with this, is I will be urgently trying to get to knowing that they can be there for me, knowing that I can rely on them, and knowing that they can show up for me rather quickly. But if we look at it in terms of counseling, trauma counseling, you don't want to sit down. Well, you might. It depends on your boundaries, depends on your path and your experiences. But you don't sit down and you go, here's all my trauma. Here is the whole story of my pain when you just meet them. And if you do, it's asking yourself, well, why? How do I know this person can hold this? And as a therapist, how do I know that they can tell me this and be okay? So all we care about is that safety for that client and safety in that therapeutic alliance that they're putting a lot of value on, potentially throwing that out there for the other to fix or change. And that part of the desperation of wanting to heal. But that's the reality. So if we look at it in terms of relationship and building intimacy, we want to skip the part and we just want to know that someone can be there. So some people have this urgency that they want to try and get to, they're available, they're responsive, and they're engaging as fast as possible, because then it's secure attachment. So we don't have to go through all the bullshit of insecure attachment. That is a recipe for disaster, because at the end of the day, how do you know? How do you know someone can be there for you after a shorter period of time of getting to know them? you can feel okay about it. You know, they've got some good warning signs for it. Not warning signs. They've got some green flags. They tick a lot of the boxes. They look like, and they have the potential for someone that can really be there for me, someone I can rely on. But when we bring two people together, it's their shit and my shit and all of our histories trying to freaking mold and independently kind of show up and do things for what that looks like. And that's an incredible space. But when we give ourselves time to see, you know, get some runs on the board of they've shown up, they are consistent, they're showing reliability. And that's what builds over time. Relationships cannot be built in a day. And safety cannot be built in a day. We can come in with, you know, open arms. Some people come in with arms crossed, boundaries, walls, whatever it might be, an ability to protect themselves, come back to their safe havens, and take the risk by making some bridges to see what happens. But it's built over time. And I get why people want to fast track it, because we just want it to be secure. We want to control the unknowns, get rid of the uncertainty, and just go, yep, yeah, let's do it. And other people are so terrified to do that really quickly, just on the other scale of things. It's like, I can't trust you. Immediately, before I even know you, I can't trust you because of their experiences and their past. So it takes a lot longer to let someone in, also based on our experiences, right? So we got to respect and be compassionate and accepting of the fact that there's pain involved in stepping into love, stepping into the realm of intimacy, because there is a closeness and a presence that's needed that we all want and crave at the end of the day, whether we're afraid of it or not, and whether there's different time frames to going into it, it's still there. So everyone sits on different surfaces for this. We move into the fantasy then, right? It's kind of part of like urgency, getting this idea. It's like, I've met you. We started to go on little bits of dates. We're starting to get a bit more connected. We go, start to build a story, you know, make some assumptions, get this idea of this perfect person and start feeling toward them in this idealistic infatuation. It's kind of more, maybe more lust. So lust blurs our ability to see a person for who he or she truly is. And consequently, it may not lead to a long-term relationship. But the fantasy is real. I want the happy marriage. I want the kids. I want the love. And I want to be swept off my feet and, you know, we whisk away and run away with them and have this beautiful, happy fairy tale. That's a fantasy, you know, and generally that fantasy doesn't come with a lot of difficult emotions. It's not uncomfortable because it's ideal. This is the difference between fantasy and intuition. So I heard something beautiful the other day around what that means is fantasy is not necessarily going to be uncomfortable because it's the ideal. Whereas intuition, having that feeling about someone else or within yourself about how you feel about them is probably going to spark up some, oh my God, I've got this feeling. Whew, what do I do with this? Oh, this feels good. Oh no, what if it's too good? You know, we get that intuition. It's like, oh my God, this is creating a little spark of energy, a spark of some sort of, you know, rumble around in the body. And that's exciting, but it's also scary. And that's where I think intuition is much more of an accurate way of moving into things, is getting that feeling, that gut instinct around some ways that you feel about them that, yeah, stirs it up. So when it's uncomfortable and it creates that little bit of ooh, ooh, ooh in the body, that's not fantasy. That's something we need to explore, be curious about, check in a bit more. It's a really good way to do it. Something also that adds this fantasy intuition mix paradox is we're not just looking for what we feel about them. They tick all the boxes. They're a beautiful person. they're passionate, they're driven, they want a family, they want kids, they work hard, they're soft and they're kind and they have all these qualities that I want, and I could see a future with them, and all these really nice things that we see in them. Great. But if we are led by that, then again, it's this fantasy. Again, it's just like, that all sounds good. I'm going to go after that. What's just as important, way more important, way more important, is how I feel, how I actually feel, rather than feel about them. How do I feel inside me, internally? When I think about it, when I communicate, and when I'm present with them. Is that stress, worry, eggshells, will they, won't they, nervousness, panic, you know, hard, trouble. Yet I feel all these good things toward them. Those are the feelings that come up. So we check in with just that. That's not good. That means something's going on. Something making this hard. Something making this not quite safe. It's the signal of, I'm trying really hard to connect, but I'm feeling a little bit disconnected. And if we can ignore that and just go, yeah, but they're ideal. They got this ideal way of being. I want to be with that. Then we're not listening. We're not listening to what's going on. Rather than, I feel safe, comfortable, content, joy, laughing, smiling, you know, feeling of that connection. There's an ease. Do I feel that within me when I'm with them? These are the things that are way, way, way more important than what we see in them, what we look to them as the things that they can offer. It's much more important to look at that. How do I feel inside? Whoa. God, I could talk about this forever. This is a great little side note. But a couple more things. What I want to do is kind of talk a little bit about this thing that I'm going through at the moment, is this idea of saying I love you, whether that be with the romantic and intimate relationships or with family and friendships. Because I feel a lot of love. I have a lot of love to give. I have a lot of love for my clients. I have immense love for my friends, and I have, you know, a definite care and love for my family. And I tell my friends I love them. I tell someone that I've just had a really nice connection with is, I love that guy. I've got a lot of love for you. But I'll say, I love you. I say I love you to a lot of people that I really care about. And I'll let them know, because I think it's so important. I want to express love. That's this need of, when I'm in love, I want to express it. I want to feel it. I want to give it out. So I say it. There's no fear around it. You know, I just sort of say it. Some people, that's not the same. I totally respect that. It means something more. When it comes to romantic relationships or intimate relationships, it's like, don't say I love you. Don't bloody go there. Don't do it. That's not good. You can't say I love you too soon. You can't say you're in love with them. All these different things. It's like, all of a sudden, there's a different criteria. There's a different rules about it all. But we feel love. So there's a lot of love being thrown around. So something about this idea, I mean, I don't have the answer for it. I'm just curious. And something you guys can kind of think about too. It's like, I could say I love you to some people. Not everyone can, but I can. And I do. But when it comes to, I share it when I feel it. You know, after I hang out with my friends, say, I love you guys. You mean a lot to me, and I'll express that to them. When I'm on the phone to my dad, I say, I love you. He says, I love you. Whether we're feeling it in the moment or not, it's just something we say with each other, and it means a lot in the moment. But when it comes to romantic and intimate relationships, I feel a lot of love. I've got a lot of love to give when I'm with them, when I'm thinking about them, when I'm you know, getting to know them or noticing really nice things. Like, there's a lot of love. But God forbid, don't tell them you love them. And I wonder, maybe there needs to be a different word, that kind of commitment word, because I think it's got a double standard. I can say I love you to my friends, but when I say I love you to romantic, intimate relationships, it means something different, and it holds a lot more value when you do it. So mate, hit me up. What's another word? What's another thing that we can say? You know, I guess it's in love, or yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just like love 2.0, you know, some sort of extra love. You know, I really love you. No, like, I really love you. You know, I don't know. It's something I've been like toying with because, yeah, I mean, in my relationships with my clients, I want to tell them I love them because sometimes it's such a meaningful thing to say, but fuck, I don't want them to think it means anything different. So I say like, you know, I feel a lot of love when you share, or I give them that feedback in that way. But yeah, it's just a weird thing, this I love you thing. So I don't know, food for thought. Love to hear your thoughts. Hit me up in the wherever the hell you can do that, comment, and obviously like and subscribe. Give me some 5 stars. Would love some feedback. But yeah, hit me up, email me, or comment on the episodes, because I'd love to know. What we'll finish on is, ideally, in an ideal world, I think the most important part, which is self-love. Now, I'm like a walking contradiction because I work primarily with people finding themselves, being able to get to a place where they feel worthy again, being able to kind of change the way that they see themselves and start really focusing on self-love. And I do recommend that that's a really important space we need to sit in order to, you know, give ourselves fully to someone else. The contradiction is, I also think we heal through connection and we heal through relationships. And there's a lot of coming together that can bring more healing than any work we can do on ourselves. So I look at it as parallel. We need to independently look at what we need to do for ourselves in order to show up and be there for someone else, in order to express the love that we want to be able to be. Because naturally we become more present the more we get aware and process what's been the experience for us and how we step into that. Feeling worthy in yourself, feeling that you love you, is obviously going to create more availability. It's going to create more responsiveness and more engagement when it comes to our attachments. So there's a lot of healing that's there for a lot of people. So it's probably just a bit of a disclaimer. But if we look at self-love, which is part of my 6-pillar self-worth model, it's the last pillar, 8 pillars, sorry. Self-love, so learning to love you just as you are and celebrate the small wins and be grateful. So I'm not a super wizard that can magically create self-love within those 8 weeks. But what I hope is that people can find change in why there needs to be a lot of love pointed out to you. Self-love is something that needs to build, something that you may grow in sections or parts of the self, but be more stagnant and difficult to move in other parts of the self. What we can own is that we are deserving of love. It is up to us whether we settle for anything less than love. Self-love means meeting your needs, not abandoning or sacrificing any parts of you in order to please or care for others. Sometimes we're going to make exceptions to the rule because we care and we love and we'll show up. But doing that consistently and with too much effort means that we run empty. We don't have too much more to do. And this is why we need that balance and work independently in order to come back. So where I look at love, and I've said this before, is it's not just about what I said at the start where, you know, we meet them in their mess, not their best. The same goes for ourselves. It can be really easy to self-love when we look at celebrations and wins and sort of take ownership of that progress. But it's also how we kind of find that we can be uplifting and empowering in those moments of triumph within ourselves. What I want to highlight, though, is the losses and the setbacks. As much as self-love is an act of appreciation for ourselves, it can also mean the act of accepting yourself for who you are in any given moment. being able to find the space for love, even in our regressions, our triggers, our heartaches, our body, our distorted beliefs, our shames and grievances. Finding love and acceptance of whatever the emotions that are arising and choosing to allow to respect and be kind is like, no matter what we go through, warts and all, I still love you. Now, that's a hard space for people to be in because shame is very binding. But this is where, if we can love ourselves in the hardest moments, in our losses, that's when we truly, really need it. We've got to lead with love. Chances are that if you have impacted self-worth, you may have led with trying to show your worth or value to prove that you are good enough or that you matter. Rather than proving anything at all, practice leading with love in as many domains in your life as possible. It's kind of like love for love's sake. That's not easy. Hence the fact that it is the practice and learning that has to be expanded and grown, just like a muscle. It's easy to miss the love for ourselves when there was not a lot of emotional availability from our attachments growing up. So it became a do whatever keeps us in relationship. So naturally, self-love takes some vulnerability. So self-protection and moderation is definitely needed. But choosing to allow love to come through in a way that works for you with your body and your mind in a more present and positive state more frequently allows for a much deeper connection with the things that you cherish and appreciate, whether they're big or small. You know, I love that boulder. That's a nice boulder. We can start to really see life for what it is. That's beautiful. This is great. You know, it's a beautiful day. I can have love for how I feel. Lastly, I'm going to wrap things up here. What I want to acknowledge that, you know, this is a huge topic. This is a massive thing, self-love or just what is love in general. So we should really take a moment to honor and celebrate what it is that we have or what it is that we are looking to get or striving for. We really need to celebrate progress in every small leap and big bound, as it's a really empowering way to practice that love and kindness for ourselves and then naturally for others as well. Every time you put yourself first, let yourself off the hook, back yourself, challenge that old belief, set a boundary, practice compassion or forgiveness, and starting to create like consistencies in your non-negotiable things you do for you, then you got to celebrate that. You need to add a narrative to the positive things that you're doing in your life by stating that this is because I'm worthy. This is because I choose me. I am lovable when I am true to me. Don't take this stuff for granted. Don't take what is happening in that small way or that big way. Celebrate it. Own it. This is a really powerful way to express and communicate. Say thank you, not just to ourselves, but when we are there for others. So, little challenge. Tell someone that you love them today. Or tell someone, if you can't say I love you, tell someone that you really appreciate and value them. We'll see how we go with your feedback. We've got to reintroduce the love letters. I can't not. Love letters is a playlist from the Reason With Me podcast and Find Reason Therapy, where we can get in the feels and appreciate love for what it is. Some of them are heartbreaks. Some of them are joyous. Some of them are reflective. But I thought I'd give a nice different kind of love letter that is really nice, kind of upbeat, melodic song that is, yeah, I guess house music, but it's got a really nice woman's voice in it that speaks about missing and just wanting to hear their voice. And I think it's beautiful and I love it. So get in the feels today, feel love for what it is, allow yourself to be afraid of what that is just for today or just for this moment. And I hope you got a lot out of it, lots of love. And I love everyone that listens to this. And please share it around. Share that love. Hope we did a good job. I don't know. We'll see. Lots of love. Look after yourself. Look after each other.
Thought of you, so I see you next thought time. I'd call you to tell you that you crossed my mind, and I took that as a sign that I should call and say.